Hey, what's going on, everyone? Welcome to the Over the Cap podcast. It's June 5th, 2022, and this is Jason Fitzgerald. You can find me on Twitter at Jason_OTC, or you can get in touch with me via email, jason@overthecap.com. Nelly the Bunny is co-hosting once again today. Nelly, anything? No, Nelly's pretty sluggish today. So we'll see if Nelly livens up during the podcast at all. So recording on a Sunday afternoon, not the Saturday night, so we're not back on our Saturday nights yet, so no beer of the week again this week, so this is 2 weeks in a row with no beer of the week, and since we had a couple weeks off, we're in about a month without a beer of the week for the podcast, but it'll come back shortly. My wife had a wedding shower to go to, not a wedding shower, a baby shower, early this afternoon, so I had to get up earlier than usual if I wanted to sneak into the gym for a little bit, so I figured I would call it an early night last night rather than doing the later night podcasting with a couple of drinks. So kind of push that off to the side. But figure we can sneak a little one in today and we'll go over a couple of things here. Nothing too crazy. The NFL, just as a quick note here, we're past June 1st. So our dead money rules will change at this point in time. If players are on multi-year contracts and they have prorated money that extends beyond 2022, what you will see now is there's no acceleration into 2022. The only salary cap figures that stay in 2022 is the prorated money from this year, as well as any guaranteed salary for this year or future years. That does accelerate into the season. Everything else will land in 2023. So a bunch of teams picked up salary cap space this week with the June 1 hits. So we did have a number of teams this year that use the post-June 1 designation. I think nine, maybe, ended up using it. So a couple teams picked up cap room. So the Seahawks have $5.1 million picked up. That was Carlos Dunlap. He's out of the league. Philadelphia had Fletcher Cox. That's a weird one. They cut him. Well, yeah, they cut him as a June 1, and then they re-signed him a little bit later. Couple million dollars less, but still a pretty big deal for the 1 year. So they pick up about 5.3, I think. That contract's a little more complex, but I'm pretty certain because it's a release and not a declined option, I'm pretty certain that they'll get their salary cap credit this year immediately. If not, they'll pick up about $3 million in cap savings and the rest will go on as a credit for next year. Bears picked up about 8.19. That was Danny Trevathan, Tariq Cohen. Two bad contracts. Cohen was always hurt. It's not, that one's hard to say was bad. Trevathan didn't really make a lot of sense when they re-upped him and did that. Browns picked up 9.5 on Austin Hooper. We talked about him a little bit last week. Cardinals got 10 on Jordan Phillips. Cowboys picked up $10 million with Collins coming off. Of all these June 1 players, he's the only one that really signed anything lucrative anywhere else at $7 million a year. Half of these players are basically out of the league. So it shows you how quick these big contracts kind of, you know, turn to nothing. Hooper got a decent contract too. I mean, that's 1 year, $6 million. So I shouldn't say that Collins is the only one. Hooper would be the other one. Titans, Julio Jones, they pick up 9.5. We've got Washington picks up about 11.9 for Landon Collins. That might be a little bit higher. Collins is one of those players where I believe they had an insurance policy based on the certain cap numbers I would see for him. But I'm not exactly sure how that money comes on and off the cap. So I have it based on just kind of what my estimates were. And it might be end up being a little bit more than that they pick up, a little bit less dead money. Collins might have something too with his suspension last year. I think I took everything out that should come out, but sometimes there's additional stuff, so that'll be there. And then the big one was the Raiders. They pick up about $20 million in cap room. That was Littleton and Nassib coming off the books. So those players are all out. You also had a couple players who had retired and they came off the books. I don't have the numbers in front of me. Most of those teams had already done it to where the salary cap pickups on that are nothing, you know, like Brandon Brooks. There's really no pickup on that because the Eagles had already reduced his salary to the league minimum. Malcolm Jenkins had retired with the Saints. Same thing. He had reduced his salary to the league minimum. So that one was already taken care of. Tuitt in Pittsburgh retired. He retired right on June 1st. They didn't do it until the 2nd. This way you could get that. I have a feeling Pittsburgh probably knew about this. I think they just waited to announce it. My guess is Pittsburgh did not want to go through the whole kind of sham where you do the retirement march and then you hold the player on the roster. So I'm just guessing that that probably did not stun them that that happened. I'm going to guess that that was probably talked about and they just decided to do it kind of a natural way. And then the other one that I think people were surprised with is Alex Mack retired this week in San Francisco. He did have a $500,000 guarantee, so San Francisco opted to pay it to him. They gave him $500,000 as a signing bonus. That's the way that you do it. It's actually a guaranteed, it wasn't even a guaranteed roster bonus. It was probably just a roster bonus that was paid out. And I'm sure they have no forfeiture provision in there for them, so that's not an issue. So they released him. They picked up enough cap room to where they were able to sign all their draft picks. If you look at where they were with their cap space beforehand, they really didn't have the money to sign their draft picks. So this gave them the breathing room to sign all their draft picks. And I think they processed almost all of them on the same day. It was the day that they took him off the books. And, you know, that gave them the money they needed because they only had about $600,000 or so in cap room. You know, the Jimmy Garoppolo thing has kind of thrown them sideways, but that contract kind of is what it is, and they're going to play that out as long as possible to try and avoid that injury guarantee that's on that deal and then see if they can trade him. And I'm going to guess at this point, too, there's probably something in the back of their minds that's telling them that, you know, if Trey Lance isn't the guy, then, you know, maybe you do want to have Garoppolo there this year to start the season. That if he doesn't play, that really does make this a complete disaster of a trade. But you'll see whatever happens with them as the summer kind of rolls on. A lot of reports from OTAs. You never read anything into them. Everybody's an all-pro in OTAs. Everybody's team is great. Everyone looks better. Everyone, if you had a bad season last year, guaranteed you've shown up in the quote-unquote best shape of your life. You can, every superlative that there is about OTAs, unless a player doesn't show up, is basically thrown out for this time of year. You know, rookie gets on the field, ask a player about him, oh, I've never seen anyone like him before. Doesn't matter what position, doesn't matter what they do. You know, offensive lineman, it's the, oh, you know, if he gets his hands on you, you're done. Yeah, that's the thing. Pass rusher, I've never seen somebody move that fast, that fluid, and be that big. You know, quarterbacks, the zip on the passes is amazing. The wide receivers, the separation that they get is incredible. You know, and then people talk about the different workout routines that were done in the offseason, and the game is slowed down for rookies from last year, like their heads are cleared and everything. Read nothing into it. It's all just kind of dead time of the NFL, and so this is what you kind of chat about during this time of year. If you haven't checked it out, I think Nick put up a compensatory pick update. So I know we get a lot of questions about comp picks. So if you go to OTC, and since I haven't had time to do a lot of writing on there, it was actually last week that he put it up. You can check that out, and you can see what Nick has up there on his compensatory pick projections, and you know that'll give you a lot of information as to the comp pick stuff that you probably ask some questions about as to why certain players don't qualify and why some players maybe do, you know, and what are the maximum, you know, possibilities that players can get. So our salary cap stuff is kind of probably steady now, I would guess, for the next month. You will probably see extension talks and franchise tag talks heat up, I would guess, in July. You know, the franchise tag, those deals have to be done July 15th. Teams will break pretty soon for the summer. You know, you'll get your little bit of a break that's in there. So you really hit the dead period once the workout stuff is done, which is, I think, in another week or two. Then you will basically get a month of nothingness with the exception of the franchise tag stuff. And then we start prepping for preseason. So, you know, our salary cap is probably going to be pretty steady here, I would think, moving forward. And then once the regular season kicks off, we can start looking at 2023. I know some people have asked me about including carryover for 2023. The reason I don't do that with the salary cap pages really is just because the salary cap space is going to change between now and the start of the regular season, because at the regular season, we move from 51 to 53. All your IR counts, all your PUP counts, all your NFI counts. You've got the practice squad players. You've got all these different call-ups, call-downs, split salaries that are going to hit. So you know, you've got enough kind of background stuff to where it's not really giving you any better of an indication if I throw carryover numbers in there now for the players next season. Would it change a look that maybe for a team like the Browns, because they have an excessive number they're going to carry over? Yeah, but for most of the other teams, it's really not going to make a big difference. Really, what you really just want to look to see where these teams are relative to everyone else. It's not so much the number that they have overall, or if they're over the cap, or how much over the cap they are. You really just want to look at, right now, where they are relative to the league, and then you can start looking at the rosters themselves and fooling around with it a little bit. Other thing on salary cap space questions that I've been getting a lot of by email and some other stuff. Questions about why don't certain numbers match between our site and Spotrac's site and sometimes the NFLPA's numbers. So first of all, on the PA stuff, we usually jump ahead of them if we can. So somebody had asked about why there were some discrepancies with certain teams, and a lot of that just had to do with the June 1. I processed the post-June 1s. They hadn't done that yet. They probably have now. Other discrepancies that happen between us and the PA is obviously they get better information than we get. So, you know, they make mistakes too with the stuff that they enter. But I would say that you can, when the regular season runs around, it's a pretty good judge of where the numbers are, whatever the PA has up there, but it's not always up to date. You know, you might be a week behind, you might be a week and a half behind. Really, until the other day, they were about a month behind. So that's one of the reasons there. The other thing, you know, it just becomes a pain to answer the questions about it over and over and over and over again. Most of the stuff they have, they will eventually just kind of grab from our site. You know, we do different kind of ways sometimes of working with the numbers, just simply from understanding certain rules. We work different with the numbers based on information we get from certain sources. So our numbers, I will almost always trust them over that, with the exception of, you know, that every now and then everybody's going to make a mistake. You know, you might have a number wrong. You have a zero that shouldn't be there. Usually pick up on something really, really nuts like that. But you know, there's little mistakes that you can make that are mathematical errors here and there with the way they come down. But, you know, I would say that you just use whatever you want to use as your estimate. And if you want to know why numbers are different, I'm just going to tell you that we do them differently. You know, there's nobody is a official source by any stretch of the imagination, but I would put up what we do pretty much any day of the week with anybody else. So, you know, that's pretty much what my take is almost always going to be on that kind of stuff. But I do appreciate when you guys email me. Like, someone emailed me the other day that we had Goodwin on the wrong team. I think I threw him on the 49ers, or somebody threw him on the 49ers, and he should have been, I think, on the Seahawks. So those kind of things help. You know, every now and then, you have some guys that fall through the cracks that will, you know, we might miss. You know, you just click something wrong when you start entering some data in. So, you know, keep those coming. But just on the thing of why things don't match up, that's why. Eventually they will. And then as the season rolls on, they won't anymore, because we do this for every week. We do it for all kinds of in-season movement. Not everybody does that. So then they'll kind of fall out again. But the focus will be on 2023 at that point for most other people. So anyway, the thing I mainly wanted to talk about today was something I mentioned last week that I just kind of ran out of time, and that was this kind of wild interview that Arthur Smith gave on the Falcons. It was really bizarre. So if you subscribe to The Athletic, the interview was there. I think it's Jeff Schultz. Let me pull it up. Yeah. Okay, so it was May 18th, so it's actually a while ago, and it was pretty crazy. You know, some of the stuff just made no sense. I'll mainly talk about the salary cap stuff, but just looking at it, like, this is the weirdest thing. So One of the things is, I guess it was a discussion on tanking and basically blowing off a season. And people ask him about, you know, what about 2023, the quarterback class that's there? Let me see if I can just kind of run through this quote. I'll read some of this here. You're in a very transactional phase of the NFL right now. Trades in the draft, trades for quarterbacks. It's a different landscape than when Jimmy Johnson took over the Cowboys in 89. It was pre-free agency. Famous Herschel Walker trade. They blew it up and went 1-15, and it was a long rebuild. That is not the same NFL as today. Back then, people would have given their firstborn before they gave their picks away. People are still going off old narratives, and it's comical. Any good team knows how to rebuild every year. That's just completely false. The draft picks have become significantly more valuable these days than they were back then. Back then, and really even somewhat modern times, teams had way more of a belief that veteran players were the way to win in the NFL. It was the Cowboys that actually kind of changed that narrative, because when they pulled off that trade, which was a spectacular trade, they got super young. They got all these young guys. They hit on the picks, which was obviously the most important thing. But they went from a team that was basically just like garbage, and, you know, they turned it around. Now, I don't know where this is considered a long rebuild. So they took over the team in 89 and they went 1-15. That's the year that they made the trade. They made all those picks in 1990. They went from 1-7, and then they were in the playoffs by 91. They won a Super Bowl in 92. So I have no idea what that is talking about at all. And the picks in the NFL, you know, that teams would give that away for established players. You know, established players were a bigger deal really all the way through 2011. Now, I'm not saying teams traded away picks all the time for players. There was also a belief you didn't trade for players off another team because those players were done. You know, if you were trading for a player from another team, it was because he was garbage for the other team. And that probably to some extent would still check out today for a lot of players, because if you look at contracts that players get after they get cut, they're usually far worse than a similarly performing player who had his contract expire. That might set off the same exact check marks in every single box, whether draft status, kind of age, all those kind of things. And, you know, that was what that is. So I'm not sure what he really meant by that. But then it really gets into kind of salary cap stuff. A lot of people who are invested in love strategy, it's a team building, they're engaged, they play pretend GM online, they pretend they know the salary cap, they pretend to know what the locker room is like, pretend to know what it's like to put a game plan together, pretend to know about life in the NFL, but they have no idea. There's a lot of strategies that come out from people who do not work in the NFL, whether it's strategies related to game planning, whether it's strategies related to approaches, whether it's roster building, trades, salary cap, contracts. Those are things that are read by teams, and teams listen to that stuff. Look, the push towards more analytics is not going to happen if there's no existence of something like a Football Outsiders or a Pro Football Focus or whatever groups want to pop up. Now, you can argue about how efficient they are or aren't, but the data that was out there eventually gets more and more picked up by teams. And you moved off the general stuff that was going to be collected by like Elias or whatever it was of your basic stats. And you started to get more into the weeds with kind of stuff, and a lot of different papers, a lot of different stuff. You know, if you look at what's done in those data bowls, those are people who are being hired by the NFL. They're being hired by teams. Those are outside people who came up with interesting enough things that they wanted to hire them. All right, we prepare certain reports for people who work in the NFL. Now, all groups that, you know, do statistical analysis, data analysis, they do consulting work, or they're working, they're engaging with those teams. So yeah, do I know exactly what a locker room is like? No. Am I going to say there's certain contracts where certain things come up and you say, well, you know, there are locker room aspects to it that teams buy into. I don't buy into it, but teams do. Okay, yeah, I get that. But I don't know if, you know, it really makes sense to say that nobody out there can learn this. You don't need to work in the NFL to learn it. Can you apply it? Do you have the ability to go out there and work all the hours and stuff? I probably wouldn't. Other people probably would. But that's something that comes with experience. That's something that comes, you know, with getting a job. But everybody starts out of the league. You know, and people bring different different types of thoughts into it. It's shaped by the people that you work with, but you kind of take your own spin on it. You know, Buffalo's general manager worked with the former general manager of the Giants. They're night and day. I'm sure there's stuff that Gettleman did that, you know, they found to be good. Or there's stuff that Loomis did. I forget. I'm not Mickey Loomis. Herney. You know, that they probably build off of. But then there's other things where clearly they don't, because it was a mess, some of the stuff that went on in Carolina. So, you know, you learn and you bring your own stuff to it. You bring stuff from the outside and you bring stuff that you've learned in the process. But, you know, the basics of this is he's trying to say that you're trying to always win, which I agree with. I'm not a big believer in tanking. And if you look at the teams who have completely tanked, it really hasn't necessarily worked. You know, very, very few times has that really, you know, the intentional tank worked. But you look at the stuff then that he just starts saying, and it just didn't make sense. So here's the thing. The Falcons had thoughts of trading Ryan before last season. They would have drawn a better return in draft pick compensation. That's absolutely true. If you look at what Matt Stafford got you, you would have gotten a one for him instead of just getting pennies on the dollar because of the bad way they did the deal, bad way they handled that situation. Instead, they restructured his contract and effectively kicked the financial can down the road for another year. Smith wanted to see how well Ryan would work with Calvin Ridley and rookie Kyle Pitts. So that tells you right there, and this is where this just goes all over the place. When they make the decision to keep Matt Ryan, they have no idea that they're going to be drafting Kyle Pitts. Maybe there's a thought that they might get him. You know, maybe there's a thought based on where they drafted that they were going to either get him or a receiver. I'm just going to assume that maybe that's a thought, but there is no way in February when they had to restructure his deal, or early March when they had to make that decision, there is no way that he's sitting there and saying, well, I want to see how this is going to work with this receiver and this tight end. And here's the other thing. When you're talking about having a quarterback who's, I'm not sure how old Matt Ryan is, 38, 37, I don't know. However old he might be, 35, 36, 37 years old. Seeing how well something works with a quarterback who is nearing 40 and the team hasn't been competitive in a couple of years, I don't care how he performs with the 23-year-old tight end and a 25-year-old wide receiver. I need to turn the page. All right, so that doesn't really make sense at all. Then it gets even more crazy. Regardless, the Falcons understood if Ryan was brought back in 2022, his contract would have to be restructured yet again. That was something that Smith, Fontenot didn't want to do because it's just delaying the inevitable. At some point, you have to trade him, is what Smith said. It would just be opening another credit card to pay off debt. They restructured his deal. They made the notification. Unless you want to believe that the information that was sent out to Rappaport, Pelissero, Garofalo, all of them, that the information that was sent out there, including how much cap space was picked up, was all wrong, was all incorrect. They made it. They decided to do it. They gave the notification they were going to do it. It never got filed with the league. People can say, well, why didn't it open up? You know, I didn't process it because I didn't see anything that indicated it happened. And then finally I said, all right, I'll process it because everyone else is talking about it and it's just becoming more of a pain to do. So I'm just going to process what it sounds like they did, which was converting, I think it was the roster bonus to a signing bonus. I think that was what they were doing. Or maybe it was a portion salary, whatever it was. They were converting however many. It was the minimum they could get away with and still, in their mind, be functional. So they did it. Then they all got the idea, probably from the owner, we can bring Deshaun Watson in here. And that changes the fortunes of the entire team on the field. We'll deal with the off the field. We'll deal with that fallout. But we bring him in here. You know, we can make something special happen. And they left Matt Ryan twisting in the wind. And then they went from plan A, which was Matt Ryan as your quarterback, to plan B, which was no quarterback. Then you have to go to plan C, which is signing Marcus Mariota, who, you know, has some talent, you know, number two overall pick, hasn't played in a while, gets hurt a lot. He's familiar with the coach, which is why they're bringing him in. And, you know, you passed on the quarterbacks in the 2021 draft, and you did get a quarterback in the third round this year, so you see if there's anything there. But right now, if you look at the odds of hitting on a third-round quarterback, the odds of Mariota turning things around, odds are you've basically put yourself in the quarterback hell situation where you are having to go and just look for whatever journeyman quarterback that you can find and sign that player just to fill a void. You know, this year is Marcus Mariota. Maybe next year is Andy Dalton. You know, maybe one year you'll get a Jameis Winston. You know, if you can't get in a position to draft someone, you know, it makes it really difficult to rebuild. Now, this is another part of it here, and this is really what I wanted to get to. As for fans and media who believe Falcons should have moved on from Ryan a year ago, Smith said this: they don't understand the cap. Sure, you could have done it and made wholesale changes to the roster, but where would you be now? We knew it was going to be brutal for 2 years on the cap, no matter how we did it. If you go with the theory, blow it up and draft a quarterback in year one, you better make sure you give the kid some help or it's going to be a disaster. Kid's going to get hit way too much and he'll have nobody to throw the ball to. Very few quarterbacks have gone through rough patches and come out okay on the other side. There have been exceptions, but you need guys to help you. What's fixable, what's not. It's why we felt it was important to extend Jake Matthews and Grady Jarrett. You make some bad decisions if you just blow up the whole roster right away. It would have been ugly. Let me see if there was something else that he had here. There was another quote, and I thought it was from this, but maybe not, where basically the decision came down to, well, if I cut Matt Ryan, I'd have to cut Deion Jones, and I don't want to do that. So, you know, this is where it just, the stuff becomes kind of crazy. So, this is what I believe he's trying to say about the salary cap, and he's just trying to say you don't get it, you don't understand it. So we did a lot of extensive stuff on Atlanta last year, both on and off OTC. So, you know, I'm going by memory a bit here, but when you looked at Atlanta, and Atlanta was a disaster, all right, their salary cap is just an absolute disaster. You looked at the roster, and you looked at what they could do, and the theory was, in my opinion, you could either get rid of Julio Jones, or you could get rid of Matt Ryan. You couldn't get rid of both. The reason that you couldn't get rid of both was because the salary cap charges for both of those two guys were way too high if they had to trade them. So if they traded Matt Ryan, and I don't have the number in front of me as to what it would have been on the cap, odds are they weren't going to be able to hold off until after June 1st. That's number one. So that they wouldn't have been able to split the cap charge between 2021 and 2022. So they were going to have to take the full cap hit that year. So if they take the full cap hit on him in 2021, they're really in a bind with their roster, meaning they have to, at that point, restructure Julio Jones. And that probably feels a little weird when you look at the roster from the outside in, that you've got this aging veteran wide receiver and no veteran quarterback to pair him with, and you're kicking the can on him. There were other issues that would have happened if they would have done that with Matt Ryan, which is kind of what he's getting to there. I think if I remember correctly, to make the cap numbers work, you would have had to trade Matt Ryan. You probably would have had to cut Grady Jarrett. Now, you might have been able to re-sign him, but you probably would have had to cut Grady Jarrett. You would have had to restructure. I think you would have restructured Matthews. You would have restructured Jones, and you would have cut Deion Jones. That's probably what you would have had to do. So you would have had to kind of rip apart a big part of your nucleus, as well as maybe some other players. There were probably some other players there that you would have to get rid of. But that's what you would have done if you would have hit the reset. So what he's telling you is that his belief is that they could compete with that same roster that had been terrible. The same declining roster. He's telling you, well, I wanted this guy, I wanted this guy, I wanted this guy, and I'm gonna move hell or high water to be able to do that. And it's like, what was the purpose of that? A 7-win season? Do you really think a 7-win season is gonna make your locker room be all high fives and be like, oh, okay, this is great? But you can see when they did the extension with Matthews, they did the extension with Jarrett. This was looking to keep this roster together for at least 2 years. They thought that they could work with this team, add a little bit to it, be competitive, and I guess rebuild on the fly in some way, shape, or form. I don't know how you're going to find a quarterback. And that's basically what the thought process had to be. You know, they went in there and part of it was, well, we don't want to cut Jones and we don't want to restructure. They did restructure Jones's contract, Deion Jones. It was a bizarre, bizarre, bizarre restructure. It was as if they ran out of money, which they didn't. Atlanta spends a ton. So I cannot believe for a second that their owner was running out of money. But they did this bizarre restructure that I've never seen anything like it. He had like nothing guaranteed. He had an injury guarantee, so maybe I won't say nothing. I don't think he was hurt, but maybe there was some kind of injury that was going to make the injury guarantee kick in. I don't know. They deferred his salary for the year. They deferred like $4 million of the salary to 2022. Let me just see exactly how much they deferred. They also had to throw in a 17th game check, which didn't count on the cap before and counted on the cap now. All right, come on, computer. All right, here we go. Deion Jones. Okay, so they deferred about $4 million. It ended up being less than $4 million because of the roster bonus they had to add in there of about $400,000 to compensate him for the 17th game check. But basically what they did is they did that because they didn't want to restructure him and kick the can. But they guaranteed his entire salary for 2022. Like, in what way, shape, or form does that make any sense for having a roster with flexibility? And then their cap was still so screwed up, they had to go back and restructure his contract anyway at the start of the season by giving a signing bonus of $4 million. So they double kicked the can. They triple kicked the can on this one. And he can't even play. He can't play anymore. They guaranteed him an extra $9.7 million. So that they could try to skirt the cap this way, which still ended up being a restructure. At the very least, if you're going to do it, just say, we'll guarantee the roster bonus next year. We'll guarantee an extra million. You know, if you want to get into time value money, not worth a million, but let's just throw it out there. At least it's not an extra nine. Where you're in a position now where this guy's got a $20 million cap hit and you can't do anything with him. So they were looking to double down on this roster again. And it doesn't make sense. When you go back to the other thing, it's like, who's going to protect my guy if I have to blow up the roster? You weren't going to have to get rid of your offensive line. You know, you weren't going to have to get rid of Jake Matthews. You could have made it work to keep him on there. You know, if that's the guy that you need, you know, this young player is going to have a left tackle. You know, I'm not even sure who else is on there. You know, I'm not familiar enough with their whole team. You know, let me look it up real quick. You know, if you want to see their other guys on the line. You know, I mean, you look at these names, it's no different than it would have been. Yeah, you had Lindstrom, Hennessy. You know, this all would have been the same. This would have been the same line. You would have had Ridley. The same stuff would have happened to Ridley that ended up happening to him, right? The same exact things. And you would have had Jones on the roster. I'm not saying Jones would have been happy. I'm not saying Jones would have been good. But you would have had Julio Jones. So you would have had a capable left tackle. You would have had some similar players on the offensive line to give a little bit of protection. You would have had two decent receivers. Now, you would have picked up an extra first-round pick. So you would have had a young quarterback. You would have had a Justin Fields or a Mac Jones. And you could have picked up someone else. Maybe it wouldn't have been the tight end, but maybe you would have gotten yourself a pass rusher. Maybe you would have gotten yourself an interior defensive player. I don't know. Maybe you would have gotten a cornerback instead of running out there with the Casey Hayward and A.J. Terrell that they have this year. You know, you would have had guys that could have, you know, could have played. But the fear, I think when you look at this and you look at what he's saying, it's not a salary cap thing. It was a fear of, I want to go out there and I want to have a chance at being 500 versus I want to take the best chance to make my team better, even though it might mean that this year I'm going to only win four games. And there's nothing that says you can't win with a rookie quarterback. There are teams that have won with rookie quarterbacks. The Patriots made the playoffs last year with a rookie quarterback. The Bills made the playoffs with a rookie quarterback. You know, yeah, the Jets didn't make the playoffs because their quarterback sucked. You know, the Giants didn't make the playoffs because the quarterback sucks. So I don't really get this. You know, it's like the salary cap becomes an excuse and it just doesn't even make sense. And I get they inherited a terrible situation. I'm not saying they didn't. You know, free agency was going to be off limits to them. If free agency is off limits to you, you need to get younger. You need to find the way to optimize what you can bring back in a trade and optimize the kind of pieces that you can put on the football field. And when you're picking top 10 in a quarterback rich draft, you need to get a quarterback in here. Now they got a great return for Julio Jones, especially in light of what ended up happening with Julio Jones. But I think if Julio Jones had remained in Atlanta, he would have been much more productive than he was in Tennessee. Maybe wouldn't have gotten as many of the injuries. I can't say that for certain, but I bet you the draft return that they would have gotten with trading Ryan the year before and trading Julio Jones this year would have been better than trading Julio Jones in 21 and trading Matt Ryan the way they did in 22. Now, maybe it would have been different if they had planned on trading Matt Ryan in the offseason. Because when you did have all that quarterback movement, at least there were viable teams that you could talk to. You know, this was just kind of throwing something together just for the sake of throwing it together before you had to pay him more money. And there's something that everybody can learn from studying teams like Atlanta. And this is why, you know, when Saints Twitter gets all upset with me, whenever I'll mention the Saints salary cap stuff, it's like, you're not saying the Saints can't do it. Just like I'm not saying a couple years ago that Atlanta couldn't do it. What you're saying is that historically, it's not going to put you in a position to where you can be competitive over the long term. And you're probably not going to be competitive in the short term either. And the problem that you get to with these teams is they rely far too much on the past and want to come up with excuses for why it didn't work in the present. And they end up screwing up their rosters with the salary cap. The league, basically with the 2011 CBA, the league did almost everything in their power to make the league, for the most part, to make the salary cap dummy-proof. All right, you were not going to have situations like arose in the past where the Cowboys and 49ers had to kind of gut teams. You weren't going to have Washington with these crazy numbers. You weren't going to have these teams that were just a mess. You know, Detroit, when they had all those top picks that they kept restructuring and just making a mess of their salary cap. It was designed so teams could control their best players through the franchise tag, you know, to where the salary cap was never going to be prohibitive for them applying a franchise tag on a good player. It was to never let you get in trouble with bad rookies who got paid incredible sums of money relative to the times. You know, it would be the equivalent, let's put it this way, the number one pick this year, I would guess, probably would have signed a contract for like $35 million a year under the old system. So you didn't have to worry about money that was going to come in from those types of players. That was gone. So you did that. You got rid of that. You created this salary cap carryover that didn't require a brain to do. All right. First, you said, well, you had to request it. Now I think it just automatically rolls over. Maybe you still have to request it. I think you actually still do. But you can roll over your cap space, and there's no salary cap minimum. So you're allowed to basically take a mulligan on a year, amass a bunch of cap room, and then bring it forward. So basically what they did is they didn't want teams like the Raiders screwing up the system, teams like the Lions screwing up the system, teams that would mess up draft slots the way that maybe the Jets had done once or twice before, you know, with certain contracts that they decided to dole out. All that stuff was done to prevent the salary cap hell situations from arising. But occasionally, teams do find themselves still in those positions. If you look around the league and you look at the teams that have done that, the teams that have really been impacted by the salary cap, and I'm just looking at salary cap space, this is no particular order, have been the Panthers, the Bears, the Steelers, Green Bay is one of those teams right now. Atlanta, Arizona, New Orleans, Tampa's going to be there next year probably, think that's pretty much it. I think those are the teams that I would probably kind of pick on. And these are all teams that had a period of some success. And I'll use the Atlanta example. Because if you look at Atlanta, there is no reason Atlanta should have done what they did. All right. We can break the NFL down typically into buckets. We'll talk about 3-year windows, but more often than not, it's a 2-year window. And you've constantly got to be moving. You got to be rotating pieces. You can have a couple of core pieces, but you also have to understand there's a time when those core pieces have to go as well. But if we look at Atlanta, so Atlanta's real glory run was the start of the Matt Ryan career. 11-5 as a rookie, lost in the wild card round. 9-7 second year. 13-3 lost divisional round. 10-6 lost wild card round. 13-3 lost conference championship. Now it all goes, sideways. 4-12, 6-10, 8-8. Then we've got our miracle. 11-5, devastating loss in the Super Bowl. Understand the next year, okay, we want to try to come back. We want to do whatever we can. 10-6. So you took a step back, and if you look at the performance of the team overall, especially offensively, you could see that the team was going back to where they were before that. This was not the team of the 2009 to 2012 era that was really kind of like New Orleans light. It was an indoor team. I'm not saying track meet, but they'd be able to put up a bunch of points. They did that in 2016, but then the next year it was kind of back to, the way things were. They'd become a team that would just gain a bunch of yards, but I think didn't function probably inside the 20 would be my guess. And then you see 2018, 7-9. This is when you have to say, all right, we went 11, we dropped to 10, now we're at 7. We need to make changes. No, double down, 7. All right, you know what? That Super Bowl was 2 years ago. Let's just give it one last chance. 4. Now you make the switches at the coach. You make the switch at the general manager. 7. Same core group throughout this. You double down. You triple down. You quadruple down on this group of like 5 or 6 players. And you get older and older and older as the league gets younger. That's exactly what happened in Chicago. Chicago looked at that one year where they did well. And everything was based on that. Minnesota, all based on it. That's another team that falls into this right now. Minnesota, they looked at it and it was just like, well, we're doing good enough. And we need the ball to bounce our way. And it's like, if you're just hoping the ball bounces your way, that's just a fluke. Now, it's weird. It's like, I'll use Minnesota as an example. They were smart. They knew the ball wasn't going to bounce their way again with Case Keenum, so they went and upgraded a quarterback. But then you have to realize that when you see your team is not getting better, staying the same, going down a little, maybe goes up a little, down a little, up a little, don't keep doubling and tripling down on your roster. Because you get to the point where you can't move on from players. I'd be worried about Tennessee being in that situation. If I had a look, Tampa's different, because of Brady. But Tennessee is probably the team that's going to be there now. You could get away with this stuff in the past. The reason you could get away with this stuff, where you went back to what I talked about before with that Dallas Cowboys trade, the league loved veteran players. The league was older. They didn't want to spend the time or didn't have the faith that they could develop that 24-year-old unless he just came on the field and was a monster. They didn't have the faith that that guy would give you, especially a guy drafted second or third round, that he was going to do as well as a veteran who had been in the league for 8, 9, 10 years, knew the team, knew the roster, knew the coach, knew the staff, knew everything they wanted to do, and wasn't going to make mistakes on the field. Yeah, you Parcells wasn't going to have to worry about throwing his clipboard on the ground and stomping his feet and giving the glare of death to some guy as he came off the field because he just made a terrible mistake. So you could do that back then. You know, you could do that when you had these teams that's what they believed in. That the concept was you need to have X amount of salary cap space to make sure that you can keep this core 5-6 guys, no matter how old they are, and then just fill in the rest of the roster around them. Those days are long gone. You have teams that are good, and then you have teams that are willing to be bad. And some of those teams are going to get better because they're amassing a bunch of young draft picks that might work out the way things worked out for Dallas all those years ago. Now, and what we've learned now, especially with the way the league is and the way they call everything and the way the coaching is and everything else, if you're a team that has a bunch of 25-year-olds on the field and you're going up against a team that's got a bunch of really smart but 29 and 30-year-olds on the field, the 25-year-olds are going to win out. They just are. They're more athletic. They're going to be stronger. They're going to be faster. They're not going to have the wear and tear on their bodies that the other guys do. So, you know, the league doesn't allow you to be competitive if you want to remain status quo. And, you know, I think you look at Kansas City, and to me, Kansas City should be a blueprint that people are looking at. And most people are not. Most people are going to look at Kansas City and they're just going to say, well, you know, they got Patrick Mahomes and they got Andy Reid. Andy Reid is really good. And Patrick Mahomes, we know, is fantastic. He's probably the best quarterback in the league. You know, maybe you can make some arguments about Josh Allen or, I don't know, well, Brady. Brady's so much older. Brady's just like his own category. But if you look at Kansas City, and you look at the changes they've made, Kansas City, I think, took the approach that they had a window with a certain roster. And once that window was closed, it was time to move on. And you've seen them. They've made difficult decisions over the years. Now, when they won the Super Bowl, you know, they did double down on a guy like a Sammy Watkins. Sorry, guys. I hate that I hated that contract. I love to pick on that contract because I hated it so much. So, anyway, they gave him a steep pay cut. It was like, well, you know, he had a role in the playoff run, playoff Sammy, and we just want to give it a shot with him again. And, you know, the next year they come back and they lose in the Super Bowl. And what happens, though? You begin to see a roster that makes some changes. Now, they just went to a Super Bowl. These other teams I'm talking about, Atlanta, Chicago, they would have tripled down on that roster. These guys didn't. You know, you saw them make certain changes. You saw certain guys leave. You know, now some of it was maybe injury related, made those decisions easier. But it would have been pretty easy to extend a player like an Eric Fisher. But they made that decision that, you know, the way that the game is, Eric Fisher is probably going to cost us 15, 16, 17 a year. He's an okay left tackle. This is before injury. You know, he's an okay left tackle. What are the other options that we could have? Other options that you could have, go into the draft and draft somebody. Going to be hard based on where the Chiefs are drafting. You know, you'd have to get lucky with a later pick. So you can't really count on that. Go the cheap veteran route because you don't really find left tackles in free agency. So you kind of go the cheap veteran route, and then you wait maybe to see if you develop someone. Or the other option is you go to the trade market and you see if you can trade for somebody's young tackle that they don't want to pay. And that was what they did. They went and they brought in Orlando Brown, who the feeling is going to have far more upside than an Eric Fisher. He's certainly younger. Now, there's going to be questions about how he's going to do in that offense. There's questions about how he's going to do transition from the right to the left side. But, you know, you could put him on the right side if things didn't go well with him as a left tackle. And you would get 1 year for cheap. You could throw the franchise tag on him a year after that, which while not cheap, is not maybe as expensive as an extension. And then you extend them after that or during that period of time. And if you look at it as a 6-year investment, all right, let's call it the 1 year that's cheap. How cheap was he last year? Let's look up Orlando Brown. Whoops, hold on. In the wrong screen. Okay. So Orlando Brown last year was 3.384. So you get him for 1 year at 3.384. You get him for this year at 16. And that number will have to be probably honored, I would guess. And so let's say you do 4 years on top of that. Let's even say you make him the highest paid in the NFL. So you do 23. And it's highest paid left tackle is probably more than that now, right? Let me see. I might be off on the 23. That might have been Bakhtiari's deal. Might have been 23. No, the 23. All right, so 23 we'll put in there. So you would be looking at that point, 4-year extension, 1 year franchise tag, and 1 year on that number. So that's 6 years all in, 18.7. So if I can get 6 years out of this guy for 18.7, and maybe it ends up being a little more, let's say it's 6 years at 20, I'd probably rather get that than get however many years I'm going to get out of Eric Fisher at 17, you know, and make the change, get younger and see if I can change the mix. Same thing. Now, Schwartz was hurt, but they had guys on the roster that they were developing, and you get into a position where it's like, well, we could keep him and see what happens, or we just say, you know, it's time to move on, and we're going to reallocate the money that we saved on Fisher and Schwartz for this one season, and now we can kind of throw that in there, and that gives us our ability to upgrade at guard. Now, I'm not saying that they should have spent $16 million on a guard. I'm just saying that you can, when you juggle those numbers and you see kind of how that works, your options are double down on your veterans or get younger. You know, even if they're not the youngest, get younger. And the numbers kind of work out. You know, they let their safety walk. Is the safety they brought in going to be as good? Probably not, but he was cheaper than what he was going to be asking for to re-sign with Kansas City, and he's going to be younger. Tyreek Hill, same thing. Goes past a certain age, the numbers were going to be too high. And when you look at Kelsey's contract, that's cheap. When you look at the real meat and potatoes of Kelsey's contract, don't get sidetracked by the 14 number. The real number is cheap. It's like 11-ish, 11 or 12. You know, so that made sense for them. Once Tyreek Hill was looking for 24 or 25, you know, and 30 on paper, that's just silliness, but 24 or 25, you start to say, all right, well, we've got the quarterback. He's got to be able to make some receivers better. We're just going to have to find other receivers. Who can we find that's younger, that we can develop, and that we can work with? And, you know, it would have been very easy for Kansas City to just keep going with essentially the same exact core that was on the Super Bowl teams from a couple of years ago. But, you know, they've been smart, I think, with the willingness to not double down on the roster. If you look, the benefit that came from the Patrick Mahomes deal was the low overall value of the contract and the huge flexibility because the dude signed a 10-year extension, which is just crazy. They opted for the low cap hits on the front end of that deal. The deal would have become incredibly expensive if they restructured him again this year. They didn't. Why? Because they can keep that cap hit manageable. It's still towards the top of the league, but now you've got all these years again that you can pick and choose where you need him low, where you can have the numbers high. and you kind of come up with this deal, you know, to where you can have the best quarterback in the game and have very manageable cap charges, because you're not just restructuring his contract every single year. So it would have been very easy, though, for this team to have done that, because if they would have followed the strategy of Atlanta, all these same guys would be on the team. You know, but they other than the year where they won the Super Bowl, they basically were constantly looking ahead. That's what they've done. They've tried to look ahead to make sure they don't get stale. Because if you get stale in the NFL, you're done. That's how you become Atlanta. That's how you become Chicago. You know, when you have these teams that are constantly just around 500, that's not a success. Now, if you get to 500 because you've changed the mix a lot, that's fine. You're trying to build for something in the future. That's that 2 or 3 year window you talk about. But when you're just still operating with the same window as the 3 years before, and you're still a 6 or 7 win team, you're just delaying the inevitable. And you're probably going to get fired in the process. So I don't, you know, it's just the whole strategy of what went on in Atlanta didn't make any sense. And then this really didn't make much sense either. Like, it to me, it just looks like more of the same. You know, when you read the comments and you read what they're talking about and the way they envision it and the players that they've extended and the players still on the team and the restructures they've done and the way they approach the draft, it's just more of the same. You know, everybody should get one mulligan, right? Fool me once. You know, everyone gets that one chance where you make the mistake. But after you do it and it doesn't work, you have to move on. You have to start looking towards the future. And they're not a team that's doing that. They're not a team that did that. You know, and there's a couple of teams that just don't want to do that. They just don't want to look ahead. And sometimes you have to. But with the salary cap stuff, you have to have that flexibility to keep changing your roster. You just do. You know, it's something that you need. All right, let's get into some questions here. Mike has a question. Which players do you see as resetting the market in the next 2 years at each position? Do you think teams will spend big next offseason as the cap increases? I don't think that the spending is really going to change until 2024. So that would be the first answer to that. As to who, so I would guess that your next group of players, let's see. So at quarterback, well, it depends on how we look at it. If we look at Aaron Rodgers at 50, which is the way that I do, nobody is going to pass that for a while. I don't even think that the Herbert, I don't think so. I don't think Murray, I think that one's going to stand for a while because of the uniqueness of it. But if we look at Watson at 46, you know, it's probably Murray is going to be the next one to possibly break that. Running back, we're not going to see anybody get above 16. Wide receiver, I'll call wide receiver right now 25. I don't think Cooper Kupp will get there. I don't think. You know, that would be like kind of the you know, one of the guys that you could see them, but I almost think that would be kind of like a funny money kind of deal. McLaurin's not going to get there. Johnson's not going to get there. I don't think Metcalf will get there. Samuel, I don't think will get there. I'm not sure. You know, I don't know who that, you know, the next one to do it, it's got to be the kid in Minnesota. I would think he's going to be the one. I mean, I guess there's an outside chance it'll be Metcalf, or maybe San Francisco will do a big long deal with Samuel the way that they did with Trent Williams. But I think that, You know, I think that would be the one at tight end. I think you're still going to have a block on tight end for a while. Left tackle, probably be Orlando Brown. Guard, what's guard at right now? Like 16. I'm not up enough on guard off the top of my head to say, you know, who that would be. Same goes with center as well. You know, I center is just so weird. You can never really tell with that. You know, I'm not even, I don't know if anyone at right tackle, I think the right tackle number is going to stand for a while. Aaron Donald will reset his own market as a interior. Your edge player is probably going to be Bosa in San Francisco. Will probably be the next one. I don't think anyone for linebacker, unless they really go crazy on Smith in Chicago. I think that one is probably going to stand. And safety, I'm going to say safety is going to stand too. I'm going to say that Fitzpatrick won't get there. Corner, I'm not sure on corner either. My gut feeling is that corner should also kind of stick. I'm just trying to pull up my 2024 free agents for corner. And it does not want to seem to want to work. All right, looks like my free agent's working for 2023, not working for 2024. So that's not good. let's see. Who else? I'm not sure. I'd have to think about corner a little bit. I'd have to think about that one. You know, just see who's up, because I'm just not able to pull up my my list here, you know, as to who might be the guy, you know, that would do that. All right, let's take a look here. Next set of questions. I know I got a couple from email. Let's see. Discussion on the Steelers, basically saying that Omar Khan is GM in name, but not really being given bigger duties. I'm not really sure on that. I mean, I guess that's possible. You know, yeah, will there be more input that comes from your assistant GM types? Yeah, but usually, you know, when a guy's GM, he's GM. You talked about extending guys earlier rather than later. It's been tough the last few years to do either of those things because of lack of cap space, but signing early was something they used to do when they had a little space to play with. Do you think there is anyone they should be extending this offseason ahead of unrestricted free agency? This is in regards to the Steelers. You know, it depends on, I guess, who they are, you know, interested in, you know, keeping. I mean, I would say that, you know, the market's probably not going to change for Johnson to where it has to be a priority. I don't think the market would change for Fitzpatrick where it has to be a priority. So I don't think with the guys they have as upcoming free agents, I don't think I'd look at any of them and be like, okay, this is an absolute must. But I think you could probably look at them and say that there could be some benefits to it. You know, with the wide receiver, probably more so than safety, because I think safety's been a pushback since the Jamal Adams mess. So I think at wide receiver, there's probably a little bit more of a chance that some guys could go up there. So if I had to choose one, I would say you'd get Deontay Johnson done. You know, but that also just depends on what you're willing to, you know, to pay, you know, for him. Let me see. I thought I might have had another one here. Let me just check. I feel like somebody else had sent me a question. And I don't see it, so I'm going to guess maybe not. Maybe I thought I got an email. All right. Anyway, let's take a look. I've gone Twitter. And we'll run through these and call it a day. All right, Black Gold. Assuming they're going to be all rookie contracts, would have been the most surplus value contract since 2015. Let's see. All right, let me look. I'll take a look at the our valuation tools. So I'll just look at last year. I'll look at who the guys were. Whoops. Let me do 2021. I'm not going to go through each year because I don't have them downloaded as a database. So I'll just run through position by position. All right. So you weren't interested in quarterback. So we had Jonathan Taylor as our top running back. He was a plus 13.8. At wide receiver, Justin Jefferson, a 16.5. You know, if I had to find a veteran receiver, wow, I'm not sure if I find a, yeah, there's really not much surplus value there. Devontae Adams, you know, I have about $4 million in surplus over his prior contract. He missed a bunch of games too, or a couple games, I guess. Dalton Schultz last year at tight end. You know, we had him at a value of about 11.3. His APY was 730,000. Left tackle, Orlando Brown. We had him at 15.5 on an 872. At guard, we had Quisenberry actually at guard. And Alex Kappa would be number two. Right tackle. Right tackle. Where did right tackle go? Wirfs from the Buccaneers. On your interior, we had Jeffrey Simmons, Max Crosby at edge, Devondre Campbell at linebacker. So that would have been a veteran contract right there. Safety, Jordan Fuller, I think, if I'm looking at it right. Cornerback, DJ Reed. Now, this doesn't mean these are the best players, just the best relative to their actual contracts, which are all rookies. Kicker was Evan McPherson. Punter, Brian Anger. And long snapper, Nick Moore. Those guys are all basically all the same. Is the current level of dead money across all teams a record? Ah, that's a good question. I would guess so. Unless that year that Buffalo, there might have been one year where there were two teams that had a lot, but that, there's a good chance. I'll have to look that one up, but there's a good chance. Josh says, what are some of the most common mistakes teams make in regards to roster construction? I think the two biggest mistakes that teams make, I think the first one is in the draft. I think there is almost no value put on positional drafting outside of just basic, you know, you know that three or four positions are always graded as like first round talents, you know, and then you have a couple of other things that kind of creep in there. There is not enough weight that is given to those premier positions in the NFL in the draft. There are positions you simply cannot get in free agency. They cost you a lot if you do, and it's just a major, major, major mistake, you know, to not do that. I think the second thing that is probably the biggest mistake that teams make is they don't extend their players early enough to maintain roster flexibility. I think most teams wait too long, and you end up overpaying for the players and giving yourself less flexibility with those contracts as the players get a little bit older. Zach says, does the new civil suit have the potential to affect Watson's guarantees? I would guess not. I would guess that unless there is a new criminal charge for something completely unrelated, I would guess that's the case, but I haven't seen the contract, so I don't know for certain. Justin says, what are your favorite football podcasts to listen to? You know, when I get time, which isn't often. So if I'm driving and I listen to some stuff, I like to listen to Kevin Cole's Unexpected Points. I like that one. Most of the guys, the PFF, I like a lot. I like Eric and George, their shows that they do. So, yeah, there's a couple things that I'll listen to. That's most of the stuff that I'll usually kind of go out of my way to try to listen to, if I can. Colin says, you aware of any studies? Oh, and I should have mentioned Joel Corey's. I usually try to listen to that as well. Those are always good. Colin says, you aware of any studies that say increased cap allocation or cash spending correlate with winning in a season? So with cash spending, you can look at things. Generally, teams that punt on a season, cash-wise, are usually pretty poor. Your highest-priced rosters are not typically... it doesn't assure you of being the best, but more often than not, the expensive rosters in a league... you'll see more of a percentage of your playoff teams come from there than the cellar dwellers. A lot of the cellar dweller types usually end up with the high draft picks, but that's also a lot of times, I think, by design, because they're gutting their rosters and just playing for the draft. Julian says, with how the quarterback market has trended to 40 million plus for elite quarterbacks, what do you predict Herbert's extension would look like? I guess probably like 48. I don't think he'll top 50. I think like 48 is probably what it'll be, because I think everyone's just going to throw the Rodgers contract out. So I think they'll work off of Watson. So I'll guess 48. What does a Hunter Renfro extension look like in years and guarantees? That's a good question. That's from John. I don't really know. You know, they paid a lot for Adams. So that right there kind of throws something on there, because obviously you signed Adams to be your number one. Now his stated value is 28. His real value is like 22. So 22 is probably our standard market that exists here. To me, Renfro belongs in that group of players who's at like 11, 12, 13, maybe 14 million. But you did have some changes this year that kind of popped up, with respect to the wide receiver market. But I think I would put him in. I'd probably put him between like 11 and 12. I wouldn't bump him above that. Even with the changing market, I think you have to be. I think you probably have to be a little bit cautious about that. He's like a 600 yard receiver, basically. He hasn't shown a higher level just yet. I don't know if he will. Cup, if people want to compare him to Cup, and to some extent, Cup did have a 2,000 yard seasons, I think, or maybe one year that was pretty close to it. And Cup was, at times, was putting up, probably a little bit more yards after catch kind of stuff, a little bit more down the field. So not down the field, but a little bit more now. Obviously, he didn't put up anything like what he did this past year, where he's at like 2,000 yards. I think Renfro would be in that range, unless he thinks that the real explosion in the market should dramatically change his number. Deadstroke 96. TJ Hockenson is in the fourth year of his rookie contract. That is 50-year option picked up. Given the Njoku extension and others, would it be more prudent to extend this summer or wait until 2023, 2024? What would the extension look like? I would wait on him. I'm not going to be worried about it. My opinion is that whatever damage is done on the tight end market is done. I still believe Kittle kind of serves as a block. There's nothing about Hockenson that, excites you other than the fact that he was a top 10 pick. There's nothing there that stands out. I'm just pulling up his numbers here. 723 yards, 10.8, 583, 9.6. Get your quarterback situation straightened out first and then figure out what you want to do at your tight end. But I wouldn't make that a priority. Robert says, there are some teams like the Saints and the Eagles that don't mind the reconstruction of contracts. It takes a special owner to bust out the checkbook and provide those signing bonuses. Correct. Not exactly. You know, when you restructure those deals, they're getting paid their regular salary. And more often than not, the salary is being paid at the same time their regular season checks would have been. So it's not like they get on a $5 million restructure, they get a $5 million check. Basically, that $5 million is going to be paid over 18 weeks, or I guess over 36 weeks is the way they do it now. So, you know, it's going to be paid out on the same schedule. There are some instances where that's not the case, and the Saints have been a team where that's happened once in a while, where they have paid a little bit up front, you know, maybe 20% of the bonus kind of within the first 2 weeks, and then the rest gets paid over the course of the regular season. But I think what you have to look at more is the teams who are constantly at the top of the spending charts. The Eagles definitely are. Saints are usually higher. So, yeah, for those, you've got owners that are, you know, those are good owners to work for. As long as the owners don't become meddlesome, when you have owners that give you a big budget, I mean, your job is just to make it work. There are other owners who don't. You're capped off a lot more, so you're a bit more limited. So there are teams that definitely have an advantage based on ownership, without a doubt. Two, it was put on IR last year due to a knee injury, but there's a lot of speculation that with the loss of his brother, he just couldn't play. Sad story. Does the NFL check players to see if they're actually hurt enough to go into IR? Yeah, there's a whole process for that. Yeah, you're not really allowed to just store guys on IR that don't belong there. You know, towards the end of the season, teams do kind of that because guys are just nicked up, and you know, if you're not competing, you don't really need them to be out there. But yeah, there's legitimate injury reasons why guys are on IR. You can't really just stash guys on there. The closest thing to that was when they was it the Rams? Yeah, the Rams. I don't remember. Was it Ashawn Robinson? In the COVID year, they put a guy on a non-football illness list, I think, basically giving him time to decide what he wanted to do with COVID. It seemed that one seemed kind of like skirting the rules a little bit, but I think they let it fly. Do you think it's possible we'll see the reemergence of the middle-class quarterback contract, given the huge gap in pay between rookies and actual franchise quarterbacks? I was wondering if some teams might try to bring it back to better compete with the 12th to 18th ranked quarterbacks. No, I don't think so. I think the way the league is going to be built from this point forward, and I'm not saying you couldn't win with those quarterbacks, but I think the way the league is right now, I think you're going to have the teams that are going to pay up for their quarterbacks, even if the players might not necessarily be a star. You know, like Carson Wentz or Jared Goff getting the big extensions. Or the teams are just going to go the rookie route and have a sub $10 million quarterback. The seasons where they do wind up with a mid-tier player, you know, which would be like the Nick Foles, Teddy Bridgewater types getting $20 million a year, I think those are going to be very few. I think your mid-tier quarterback types, you know, your guys making $15, $16, $17, $18 million a year, they're all going to be one-year quarterbacks, and they're probably not even going to make that kind of money. I think the days of teams really trying it out with those one-step-above journeyman types on a long-term solution are probably gone. I think you would need a fundamental change to the way the NFL operates in regards to free agency. I think the problem is that while I can say that, yeah, I think you could build a roster that can win with Nick Foles if Nick Foles is your quarterback for 17 games, I think because none of the best players make free agency, and it's very hard to be an incredible drafting team, I think it's probably hard to win with that kind of quarterback, because I just don't think you can put the pieces around him overall that make it work. Now, could you get a situation where you do have one of these rosters that was built you know, to win with a rookie quarterback, the rookie quarterback was really bad, and you make that move to that type of player? Maybe. But usually, again, when you've got that rookie quarterback, you will give that guy 8 million chances before you quit on him. You know, and by that point in time, your window's kind of closed, and you've lost that little peak performance era. But I think the thing is that there was a time when you had good players get to free agency, or great players get to free agency. And there might have even been a time when, you know, granted some of those players were a little bit older, but if the league was older, that was okay. It's all kind of works out relative. But without that, I just don't think you can plan on it. You know, if better players made it to free agency, if the franchise tag did not exist, and players held firm about not wanting to rush into a contract extension, I think you would be able to see the type of player movement that's possible to allow you to try to build that way. But until that happens, and I don't think it will, you're just not going to see that. The only other way that it would happen is if the quarterbacks on all these teams refused to sign contract extensions. If they all did what Kirk Cousins did and Dak Prescott did and said, we're going to make you play the franchise tag game with us. If you did that, you would block the franchise tag from being used for other players on the roster. But right now, you never get A-level talent in free agency. You get B-plus level talent or B-level talent. That just gets overpaid. All right, let's take a look at the next set of questions. All right. Do you see void years being used as frequently as they are by every team going forward, further away from COVID? No. I think when the salary cap does rise again, like significantly rise, I think teams will stop doing it again. I think right now, because the cap is still kind of stagnant and people were planning on more, and I think there's a feeling that there is a big number coming 2 years from now, I think teams are using it. But I think down the line when the numbers grow, I don't think you're going to see as many teams doing it, with the exception of the ones who, you know, were doing it before. I think those teams, like the Eagles, will continue to do it. The Browns will continue to do it. Saints will continue to do it. Those teams will continue to do it. But I think the other teams will not. Spaceship Mirror. What actions can the NFL take to stop the Browns from circumventing any penalty or fine against Watson? Really nothing they could do. You know, it's not like this is the first player that this has happened with before. So, you know, it is what it is. So, you know, whatever the NFL decides to do, that's what they can do. Another question about Hunter Renfrow. So we talked about that before. What does a deal for Orlando Brown look like? I would guess top of the market. You know, I guess 23, 23.5, 4 or 5 year contract, something like that. He did hire an agent. So maybe that gets the ball rolling a little bit. I'm not sure. But I would guess that Brown wants to be the highest paid left tackle in the league. And I would think that they'll do that. You know, if you look, they made the guard the highest paid guard in the league. And obviously they have a lot invested in Brown with all the draft capital they gave up for him. So I don't really know what the team could stand on to say no. So I think really it's just trying to make the contract structure as advantageous as it could be for them. But I think he'll be the highest paid tackle probably in the NFL at this point. And that number has actually changed for me. That I was lower on him, I think, before that. But I think with just some of the movement we've seen, you know, with like Cam Robinson and stuff, I just think that pulls the numbers higher. Do cuts at this point in the offseason still count against 2022 cap? Yes, they do. So it still counts. It's just the future money does not. Who are the biggest surprise cut candidates to shave off cap space, or did that part of the offseason already pass? Yeah, that part already passed. With the exception of Garoppolo, that already passed. You know, the everybody makes a big deal out of June 1, but the fact is, once they put in that post June 1 designation, the June 1 date became meaningless. Before that, yeah, there were teams that used to actually have to wait until June 2nd to cut players. Now you just use a post June 1 and you cut them. So the teams that need to do it, do it. It's not like teams have to do that afterwards. So you may have surprise cuts that happen in part because of salary cap stuff, you know, where it's just that they saw a younger guy in camp who was productive enough to where they would say, well, you know, that benefits us from a cap perspective. It benefits us from our budget. We'll get rid of the veteran, but that doesn't really have to do with, directly with, cap space and June rules. Any outs for the Browns on the $230 million Watson contract? No, nope, nope, nope. So unless Watson does something, you know, if Watson goes to jail and stuff like that, yeah, obviously that would change it. But there's really no out for them on it. You know, if you were just looking to escape the contract, and you look at what they gave up, obviously that's not their intention. A lot of being said right now about Mayfield having to attend training camp if he's not traded before, because otherwise he'll risk getting fined, but I can't imagine the Browns want him there, so couldn't they simply excuse him from attending? Yeah, the Browns could excuse him. They don't have to fine him. Or actually, maybe they do have to fine him. I'm not sure the rules on the fining. The issue for Mayfield is I don't know what the void language is necessarily in the deal. I don't know if this is one of those where if you skip a mandatory... if that will void your guarantee. See, the thing is, if it voids the guarantee, then the Browns can get off scot-free. So Mayfield has to do what he can to make sure that his guarantee stays in place. But I don't know if the guarantee can go because of that. I do believe his guarantee would vanish if he doesn't show up for training camp. And I know he can get fined big for that. And those, I think, are mandatory. So, he probably has to be aware of that kind of stuff. Who are some unexpected cuts next year? Oof, that's too far in advance for me. I haven't really even started to look at the teams for next year. I don't even know what would be considered unexpected, but I guess you would go back and you would want to look at some of the big signings from 2020. 2021, and you would look at players who were going to get cut that were signed then. But I'd have to give that a little bit more of a look. We'll get to that during the season, maybe over the summer. People's Champ, concern for the Jets' payroll situation for the next few years. Quarterback only making $6 to $7 million. We don't have much cap space. Would the Browns trade Baker Mayfield for Darnold if the Panthers paid some of the Darnold salary? Maybe on the Browns one. I'm not worried about the Jets. They decided to do this to basically be able to add as many pieces as they could this year. Their cap space next year is, I think, middle of the road. Yeah, it's middle of the road, and they'll have, you know, a little bit of flexibility with the roster. That some of the guys will be gone, like a Carl Lawson type. You know, he's only gonna be on the roster if he does really well this year. I wouldn't worry on that front. I think the Jets did it this way so they could add as many parts as possible this year, because this is really an important year for the team. If the Jets aren't any good this year, the guys are going to get fired. How much cap space do the Seahawks project to have next offseason? Next year, the Seahawks have a lot. $65 million is where we have them. Not counting carryover, though they'll be middle of the road carryover. 2024 is way ahead of the game, because of how much changes. But yeah, they'd also be like top six or top seven, so they have the ability to change things around. What are your thoughts on the Browns' cap situation? Why are they hoarding all of this cap? Would it have made sense to front load a few of these contracts to just hoping to roll stuff over? Yeah, they're just playing to roll over. It's a big emergency fund if something really cool presents itself for them this year. Let's say you can make a trade for a big time star, that maybe can help you during the season. So But I think mainly it is there to pull over to next year where they have salary cap issues, and you know they can do that. Bob says, am I correct that OTC's 23 cap estimates don't account for carryover at this time? Yep, that is true. If so, at what point do they start accounting for it along with any incentives players earn? The incentives I typically don't do until after the season. So I'll start accruing those after the season. Carryover, usually I'll start putting it in September. So after final cuts, after it switches over to the 53 and I get all the practice squad in and the last batch of extensions, so it might be the first or second week of the season, and then I'll usually start running the carryover estimates in there. All right, I think that is it. So that should be it for this one, and we'll see what our schedule looks like next week, but I'm sure we'll be able to get a podcast in there. Did check out the new Obi-Wan show. I kind of liked it. I watched it with my daughter. She was into it. It's like the one prequel character who's decent. She likes all the prequel people, so she was more excited about Hayden Christensen coming back. But I've liked it. I thought it was pretty good. I know some people have been critical, I think, of the meeting between Kenobi and Darth Vader. Sorry, that was a spoiler, I guess, there. But I liked it. I think it's been cool. I think the little Leia has been, she's been great. So everybody knows I'm a big Star Wars fan. So I've liked that one. Little disappointed it's only 6 episodes, hoping it'd be more. So not as good as The Mandalorian. Not as good as that, but it's pretty good. You know, they've done a good job with their TV series. On the Disney Plus, better than they did with certainly better than they did with that Rise of Skywalker garbage movie that they put out there. But they have, you know, it's going to be tricky to do. Sorry on the Star Wars tangent here. It's going to be tricky to do, but I think that there's a lot of stories that they could do that are kind of between A New Hope and Revenge of the Sith. And I guess just a question of how you can get those in there. And there's probably some stories they could do, like with The Mandalorian and Boba Fett, that are between Return of the Jedi and Force Awakens. The trickier part with that is, what do you do with the actors? Because obviously, like, recasting young Han Solo was a disaster. Now, you can recast someone as a kid, nobody's going to care, but it's hard when someone's an adult. When you recast them like that, you know, unless there's a big, you know, age gap. So I don't know, but they've done a pretty good job, I think, with these. So hopefully they'll do some more of them. They did a good job with Rogue One. I thought that was a really cool story with all, you know, different characters and stuff. So anyway, that was my Star Wars tidbit. So everybody have a great week, and I will talk to you all again soon.